Storm Sebastian has brought yet more rainfall to Britain. Our fields remain sodden or submerged with flood warnings still in place. Yet 24 hours later, today here in Stoneleigh, the sunshine is beautiful. But are the farmers and growers across the country keeping their heads above water today? What decisions are they making on farm to weather the storm and make sure they have a productive year ahead? I'm Sarah MacArthur, and today's podcast will be gaining insight from James Winslade, a cereals and beef farmer who used social media to keep his business safer today after the Somerset levels flooded almost 5 years ago. And when we spoke to him last, grower David Hoyles was affected by drought. Now, with reservoirs fully topped up, we'll hear what decisions he's making to manage cash flow and reduce damage to waterlogged land. Finally, we'll hear from our Market Intelligence Director, Phil Bicknell, who will share how the potato harvest has fared, what progress has been made with the early season planting, and implications for livestock production going forward.
Well, James Winslade, and I farm on the Somerset levels.
James, thanks so much for taking time out of your day to speak to us. You know, like many farmers in your area, the floods of 2014 were obviously a really troubling time for you, your family and your business. Could you offer any words of advice to farmers in areas which are surrounded by flood water or dealing with wet grounds at the moment to help them through these difficult times?
Yeah, as you say, we went through it. We were out of our houses and out of the farm, well, out of the houses for 11 months. Because we had 3 months of water in the houses, and it was sort of a really bleak time. We had to evacuate. It was how much help we had, not only from our local farmers, but from farmers and also the wider community from around the country, and that really sort of pulled us out from really quite a dark place at the time. And that was all due to sort of going on to Twitter, Facebook, and sort of advertising our plight, as it were. And we got forage, we've got, you know, people helping evacuating. People I'd never met turned up to the farm to help evacuate animals with tractors and trailers for 48 hours, which absolutely incredible. You know, it's a dark old time for the boys, who are flooded at the moment. But it does get better, and to be honest, it gets better. But you need to keep the pressure on to maintain watercourses.
Yeah. So communications and social media really helped you to reach and make your situation clearer in people's minds outside of the Somerset Levels area, I guess.
Definitely. I wasn't on Twitter before the floods, and it was only Christmas. I sort of, let's try this new technology. It wasn't new, but it was new to me. Joined Twitter, joined Facebook, and actually the response was huge. You put out something on Twitter, you know, desperate need of forage for my cattle, which we'd evacuated or finished evacuating on the Friday lunchtime. We started on a Wednesday. And on Saturday morning, we had two lorry loads of round bale silage come to Sedgemoor Market from Scotland. And that was just purely through Twitter. And then it snowballed, and then young farmers in Essex and young farmers all around the country started donating forage and collecting forage. And we had so many lovely letters from the general public, you know, offering help. And this lady came over every week from Cheltenham with cakes and sandwiches for people, you know, who were, this was post-flood, helping with the tidy up, really, which was amazing, absolutely amazing. And that was all on the back of Twitter and Facebook. And it just gathered a momentum. Hence, so from there, we then, myself and Andrew Ward and a few others, created Forage Aid, which is sort of a Twitter, Facebook-based charity that helps animals in distress or in need.
Yeah, I think Tom Hind in AHDB is involved in that as well.
Is there anything
you were aware of in the charity that they're doing to help these farmers in a similar situation just now? Do you know of anything going on there?
Oh, yeah. We helped in July. The Yorkshire had the flash flooding, so we went up and helped farmers clear up and assess sort of damage, and we've taken in silage and hay for them, for the silage and hay that they've lost. We're in Doncaster, we're in Lincolnshire also helping. We've provided grass keep and sheep keep, because you can go onto the Facebook page or onto our website and donate whatever you like, time, money, forage, and then so we had some grass donated or grass ground donated, so then some sheep were evacuated to that grass ground. We're now correlating, there's 8 farms in and around Doncaster that are needing help and assistance, so we're correlating what forage they will need to sort of see them through the winter.
Excellent.
So yes, it's there, but it's becoming more and more of an issue. You know, we're, like I say, in and around Doncaster, Yorkshire, Lincolnshire, Gloucestershire, we've had some calls from, and also Oxfordshire. And, you know, all these areas have had flooding.
Yes, it's incredibly wet this period, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
I guess the human help has been amazing, it sounds like. From a business perspective, you know, things like insurance and managing cash and so on after the flooding situation. Do you have any insight which might help farmers in a similar situation today, anything that would help them?
Well, it's a challenge. It's a challenge. And I not brilliant advice, unfortunately. I found, you know, with our insurance companies, they were very good. They helped us no end. So there was a positive with that. Slight problem with that is that our premiums went up from 9,000 to 22,500. pounds, and it wasn't our fault, as it were. So this is a thing that, you know, if farmers are taking water to save bigger areas of housing, or, you know, to save property, really they need, and this is what I'm trying to get through to government and environment agency, is they need support because of they're parking water on land rather than in houses, and I can understand that, but you don't get compensated for that. So I think, you know, I'm hoping, and we've been trying to get that done since the Somerset floods, and it's gradually, people are taking more and more notice. So, you know, it's taken 4 or 5 years, but with climate change, global warming, more rain, you know, more rain, heavy rain, we're seeing more and more issues with flooding, so hopefully something will change there.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Ward over in Lincolnshire, whose land has been pictured underwater, you know, communicating those images, I think it leads a lasting picture in people's minds of why farmers need help and support through these times.
Yeah, it's not only the you know, financial aspect, it's the wildlife aspect, it's the worms, you know, the good bacteria. We went direct drilling before the floods, and we were building up a really good bacteria in the soils, and a good soil structure and good worm population. And then all of a sudden the floods come along and wreck 10 years of work, killed the worms, all the structure of the soil slumped, it changed the acidity of the soils from alkaline to acidic, and we had a deluge of weed from all over the place, because it's come from the hills, it's come from all over the place and sort of landed on your land. And it just, yeah, it's very difficult. It's taken us 4 to 5 years to get our soils back to nearly full productivity, but the weed burden that we had was taking up 2/3 of my spray bill, which we didn't have beforehand.
Yeah, and I guess from nutrients and protecting your crops, is there anything different you're doing now? So how are you analysing the quality of your ground just now, and how are you treating it for the difficulties you're having?
Well, we've got a really good agronomist, and you know, he is vital to keeping you on the straight and narrow and getting your land back. And you're having to do not field by field, but section of field by section of field, because the water stayed on some areas of the field longer than other areas, which altered. So it's not the same in the whole field. So we are using more technologies, GPS and sort of things like that, and taking regular soil samples, using gypsum and all sorts of different things in the agronomist toolbox, as it were, to try and get it back, which there's been a cost to it. To me, you know, insurance companies don't pay for it, or any other authorities help you out with that. And this is why there needs to be some sort of charge to the land. If there's water put on it, they need to pay to put the water, you know, the land back right. We're not insured like the American farmers for crop loss. We lost in the Somerset floods, we lost in excess of £100,000 worth of crops in the ground. And so then we had to spend that money. It's £35,000 worth of grass seed we had to buy. You know, that's not covered. None of that's covered. So it had an impact to the business. Luckily, we were in a position we could absorb that, either through the overdraft or what have you. But and like I say, we're coming out the other side, but things do need to change. We are now dredging the rivers in Somerset, which has made a huge impact on not having so much water on the land, because the rivers down here, River Parent and River Tone, are man-made. They hadn't been dredged for 25 years, and they'd silted up in places up to 52%.
Gosh!
So now they're back to their original sides. Not completely. There's many years worth of work, but the pinch points that were restricting the flow are now back to where they were originally designed, and the statistics actually show that by doing that, there was a main road and a railway line to London underwater for 18 weeks in Somerset. By dredging, the model that was done showed that if we had the same amount of rainfall, same amount of flooding, the road and railway line would be under for less than a week. So that, you know, we're never going to say, we're not saying we won't flood again, but what we're saying is the water won't be there for months and months and months. It will be on the land and gone again. Well, crops will survive for 14 to 20 days underwater. As long as the crops, you know, you've got that water off and are proactive at getting the water off, you know, that it's not a massive problem. It's then when the water stays for so long, like in Henry Ward's farm, you know, it does all the damage that, you know, after 3 weeks of on the ground.
Yeah. As a livestock farmer, you know, how do you feel you protect the environment? And do you, you're at the coalface of the climate situation, you know, with land underwater. You know, do you sympathise with those climate activists? And I suppose as a livestock farmer, how do you believe you make a difference to the British environment?
Well, as a livestock farmer, we're on the Somerset levels, and a lot of it is peat moors and grass ground. Half of my farm's grass. And that is a good carbon sink with the peat moors as well. We've also got the farm down, or a certain area of farm down, to a higher level stewardship. And we've also got a section of farm in an SSI, which is Special Site of Scientific Interest. So we've got the birds, the wildlife, you know, we've got such a diverse habitat that we're proactively sort of with Natural England working with them to, you know, have a diverse habitat for everything out on the moor. And it's lovely to see kingfishers, otters, owls, hare, snipe, curlews, you name it. We've got a huge list of animals and birds out there. And we produce beef on our farm and corn. We direct drill, so we're not actually turning the soil over and creating a carbon release.
Yeah.
You know, everything's within a sort of 5 to 10 mile radius of our farm, whatever we're doing.
Yeah, it sounds like individual farmers themselves can make a real difference.
Thanks, James. And now we'll hear from David Hoyles, who farms in South Lincolnshire. The last time we spoke to him was during the drought. So let's see how he's faring today on one of the wettest autumns on record.
David, you're farming in Lincolnshire, a region which has been quite badly affected by the flooding. We're in quite a different situation today compared to the drought. I know you grow a number of crops and you've always had a pragmatic approach to things. How are things with you on your farm, and, you know, what decisions are you making now in light of such a variable year?
Yeah, you're right. We have had a season of extremes, very hot, dry spring. Then in June, we got over 200 mil of rain, 8 inches. And then a hot, dry July, then a wet August, then a dry September. And then sort of end of September onwards, it's been wet. Yeah, it's been a bit of a struggle. We're certainly not alone in our region. The whole country seems to have had some extreme weather this year. But, yeah, it's caused us various issues. Combining was fairly disruptive. And then vegetable harvest, which is what we do quite a bit of, has been quite a struggle the last 2 months. We've got soil structure issues, increased labour costs, reduced productivity, machinery getting fairly thrashed around, and the staff as well working some long hours under not great conditions. So yeah, it's been a challenge.
Yeah, I'm really sorry to hear that. I mean, what are you thinking longer term now? I know, you know, with the different varieties of crops and the different times of year for planting and harvesting and so on, have you got any kind of plan in terms of what you'll do differently, what you might plant differently, and, you know, maybe whether you'll let some of your land lay fallow for a little while whilst things start to recover?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, the weather has forced us to make changes to our cropping already. We're on version 6 or version 7 of our cropping, and we're 70-80% spring cropping anyway. So yeah, we've changed fields that were meant to be wheat. They've still either got potatoes in the ground or got very rutted field conditions, so we're unable to get those established, so we've juggled some things around there. And then spring cropping wise, we're going to have to see if we do get a period of dry weather to try and level some of these fields, let the water disappear. We're using things like the EFA requirements. We're going to be taking 12-24 metre headlands out of production, putting green cover down, establishing those to try and repair the damage and take land out of production for a year.
Okay.
But I guess more importantly, we're trying to keep the business afloat in terms of staff morale and cash flow. So we're bringing crops that are meant to be sold in the spring. We've talked to customers and we're moving some of those now. We can't sell other crops because we don't know whether we'll get our stuff out of the ground and we'll have enough to fulfill committed contracts, or soil conditions such as sugar beet harvest just mean them staying in the ground. So we're juggling stuff around for cash flow, sales wise we're juggling cropping around just to try and get the use of the fields that are available to us. But we're also talking to landlords now for 2020 crops, saying actually, do we really want those fields anymore? There's no point starting off in a bad foot with poor soil conditions, seed beds. So if there's rented land in and it's not in very good order, should we be cancelling seed orders and not putting the stuff in the ground at all? So these are decisions that we're sort of going through. and sort of juggling. And each week that passes, you get less decisions available. But we're talking about them early, and I guess the other thing we're looking into is, with the cash flow in mind, is finance. So if this continues for another 2 or 3 months of bad weather, and heaven forbid that we get a poor spring, a wet spring, then there might be some very big, serious financial implications where people need to start talking to their lenders, their banks, etc.
Okay. I mean, I wonder if there's any sort of tools or information that you're using, you know, to make these kind of decisions. Is it part of your business planning? How are you managing to make these decisions? You know, are you taking sort of soil, water measurements and that sort of thing? Or, you know, what information are you using to make these kind of decisions?
At the moment, it's more practical day-to-day management. So we're looking at what options. We haven't pulled the plug on what we might or might not be able to achieve this month or very soon to be December. So we're looking at what help people can give us. The likes of NHDB, of NFU, the likes of the RPA, and also I'm involved in properties and buying groups. They're realising the severity across the farming industry, not just our little area of the world, but the livestock boys and up and down the country. And they're offering some fairly sensible suggestions as well. Delayed payment Good. Terms, availability of a seed types, of a seed varieties, in case people have changed their cropping. But I guess on more the micro level on the farm, then it's too early to say. So, yes, we do soil analysis. We look at soil structure, but until we can get on the field and we know what we're dealing with, then we can't really look at that level of detail yet.
Okay. And I suppose there's a lot in the news at the minute about climate change. And you know, we can see all the protests being carried out across the UK over the last, I suppose, 5 years or so. We've seen quite a bit of variability in the weather. Is there anything as a farmer that you're, you know, thinking about for the longer term future, you know, I suppose so that you can manage that variability in the weather and in the sort of difficulty it places your business within?
I think you're right. I think farming is, most of us are in for the long term. We make long term business decisions. Is this going to be the norm? I don't know. We've had one extreme year wet. Do we then plan our business around that? What if we get another 2 or 3 of them in the next 5-10 years, then probably we will. We'll then have to look at size of machinery, we'll have to look at timing of operations, we'll have to look at labour force, automatisation. Should we be investing in that now? I'm not quite sure, because if there's only one event in 10 or 20 years, can we justify being set up for it? If it's going to become more frequent now, then yes, we need to look and probably change the way we run our business. But farmers are already, they're tweaking what they're doing. They look at varieties with plant breeders. They look at storage, they look at irrigation, they look at drainage. So there's a lot of work already doing that perhaps people aren't tapping themselves on the back enough for. They're fairly resilient. And now we're just going to see how frequently these weather occurrences happen.
Excellent. Thank you, David. And I suppose just finally, on the environment, there's, you know, quite a lot of news around, you know, different types of farming and the damage to the environment. Is there anything you're doing, on farm just now that you believe might have a benefit to the environment in terms of how you manage the water levels on farm, or different ways you're looking after your crops that benefit the environment?
I think we all try and look after our soil the best way we can. There's more sophisticated testing going on these days. There's product testing as well, so grain analysis, tissue analysis. So I think we're fine tuning to another level now as to what nutrients, what drainage, things that we can sort of manipulate in the growing cycle.
Okay.
Going forward, is there ever something to do? Well, there's a lot of interest in sort of tunnel farming and indoor farming systems.
Okay.
Plant-based products or meat-based products, who knows where it's going to go, but it's consumer-led, but it's all got a cost. And generally, my views are that people still want cheap food, or the majority of people still want cheap food that's been safely grown and it's got the traceability that's needed. But these things come at a cost. If we're going to put mitigation in to try and reduce risk, it's got to be paid for somehow, and we can't have everything. At some point, the supply chain is going to have to be supported in that.
Thanks so much, David. And now we'll hear from Phil Bicknell, who's AHDB's Market Intelligence Director.
I'm Phil Bicknell. I head up the Market Intelligence team at AHDB. We're the team that look at the numbers, what's happening in the industry, market analysis, the production data, and all that kind of insight that helps farmers make better business decisions.
Phil, we've had an amazingly wet autumn, and there have been two reports out recently which give an indication of some of the early results of the potato harvest for this year's crop, and also the early bird planting survey, which looks at what farmers are putting in the ground. How's it looking for the year ahead based on this data?
Yeah, amazingly wet is probably a bit of an understatement. We know lots of growers around the country have had challenges getting potatoes out the ground, and we know that arable guys have had a real challenge getting next year's crops into the ground. So starting with the kind of early bird survey, which looks at cereals plantings across the country, and it's important to stress that this is what has been planted but also what farmers are planning to plant, so it's about their intentions as well. Headlines from that shows the intended wheat area being down 9% year on year, shows intended oilseed rape area being down 23% for 2020. You then see a bit of a change in terms of the spring sowings as well. So people are anticipating putting more spring barley into the ground, for instance. So we're expecting that to be a 28% increase based on the survey work we've done so far, which would put that area at over 900,000 hectares.
And so what does this tell us, and how is this used, how are these kind of planting decisions used by the market and actually, I suppose, by our retailers to make a decision on what they're going to do for the year ahead?
Well, look, I suppose it gives an indication of potential supply. And we're at a relatively early stage. As I said, this is intended. Certainly, as you travel around the country, there are certainly lots of crops still to go in the ground. As it stands, kind of conscious that people are planting into wet conditions, would be planted into cold conditions if they were able to get on. So actually some of those intentions, some of those things where when we went out back in mid-November and asked people about planting intentions, they may revise those as we go through the winter. So for the first time, we're planning on going back out and redoing the survey work late January into February to give a much better indication of what is likely to be planted. That then starts to give some scenarios about what total production might be in 2020. Already starting to see some of those, and we'll pick those up in our regular analysis.
Cool. So tell me about potatoes, Phil. What's going on?
Potatoes has been really challenging, particularly in some parts of the country, particularly in the northwest and into northeast, particularly parts of Yorkshire. So we keep tabs of the area that's lifted. What we've seen as we kind of headed into again to the middle of November, we were still seeing about 10-11% of crops still in the ground. However, big regional splits. So that was a third in the northwest. It was a pretty sizable amount when you started looking at the area left in the northeast as well. So those national figures don't always represent and capture the regional and local challenges that farmers are facing. We have put out our total production estimate based on the production area and anticipated yields gathered again from farmers telling us what they've been harvesting. Those early figures are suggesting a production level of around 5.1 million tonnes for UK potatoes. That's based on an average yield of close to 45 tonnes a hectare. We also assume that there's going to be some losses, i.e. potatoes are not going to make it out the ground, a relatively small area, we're also anticipating some challenges around wastage. Of course, you talk to potato growers that have had wet crops in the ground, even if they can get them out, they're really concerned about the storage of those crops and the problems that might create. Hence, it's not just about physically lifting them, it's about being able to sell them and generate revenue and income from that.
With these variable conditions then, what do you think this means for farmers in the future? You know, is there anything we can see now that's going to impact on the future security of food production?
That's a big question. I suppose I'm conscious when I kind of take a step back and certainly look at recent years, it feels like weather events are getting a bit more extreme. Kind of roll back to the summer of last year, there we were talking about the impact of drought. Here we are with what's shaping up to be an unusually wet autumn, but increasingly the severity of those impacts are being quite severe. What do we start to see? I think for me, actually, as a farm business, trying to take a step back and think through some of the challenges that might occur, some of the contingency planning, some of the resilience, that is probably where some farm businesses might be taking a bit of a sense check now, based on the experiences over the last couple of years, because we've always adapted and responded to the challenges of the weather. However, at the extremes, it does rein in and limit our options.
Okay. And I suppose from a livestock perspective, we've looked at crops beneath the ground, but what is the data with our livestock telling us at this stage?
From a livestock angle, I suppose what we've through the summer kind of pick up lots of feedback that actually fodder crops got replenished, so much better stocks of silage and hay and straw compared to where we were on the back of the drought in 2018. That's a huge positive. The flip side of that is that cattle in many parts will have gone in earlier. So I was talking to a chap yesterday whose cows went indoors probably about 8 or 9 weeks earlier than they would have done. That all impacts on cost potentially. So that's probably the lookout. The other bit I'm really conscious of is that if livestock were housed in October or even earlier, that makes a very, very long winter. So again, think about some of those extreme weather events. Not that long ago, we had the beast from the east where it was cold. That delayed turnout. People will be starting to think for actually, I can plan and budget for a 140, 150 day winter. If we're at 180 day or 200, that starts to create some challenges for some of our producers, I think.
And are there any tools or guides that farmers can use to make these kind of estimations in terms of how much forage and feed they're going to need for the year?
Yeah, we've got it's something we produced actually back in the drought to try and help just kind of a bit of forward planning and assessment. So we've got a forage and fodder checker online, and that takes. Takes effectively the kind of dry matter content of the feed that you've got and balances that with the livestock that you've got and the amount of dry matter content that you'll need. So at a kind of livestock nutrition level, it's kind of relatively straightforward to do. It's only part of the picture when it comes to livestock nutrition, of course. It's not a full diet planner, but what it is doing is giving you an indication of whether the stocks that you've got are going to cover the livestock needs. So I must admit, I've used that back in the drought to try and work out on the family farm. Had we got enough feed to see us through the winter? I've been revisiting again recently to say, well, our cattle have gone in earlier. What does that mean in terms of the amount of feed and fodder I've got in the shed?
Good. Okay. I suppose finally, retail prices always comes up in the news. Are our chips and crisps going to get more expensive? And what does it mean for the steaks and stuff like that going forwards?
Look, from a personal perspective, the weather always prompts a bit of a deluge, actually, of media inquiries about the price of food. I'm really conscious that what happens at the farm gate is what really matters to me and to our industry. There isn't necessarily a strong link between farm gate prices and retail prices. If they do move, it tends to be to a much lesser extent at the retail end, and there tends to be quite a significant time lag. Big concern for me is the profitability and the viability of farming. On the back of some pretty tough conditions, what does that mean for farming's bottom line? And if you take something like potatoes, if people have had to write off crop, if people are not able to get cereals in the ground, the bigger concern for me is not what happens to food pricing at the retail level. It's about the viability and profitability of UK farming businesses.
And as now we're in the winter period for crops, We're in a place where we can plan for that better weather. Our nutrient management guide, RB209, used alongside the winter rainfall information, will help you to reduce soil nitrogen loss and to make sure that you apply the right nutrients to your crops whilst the weather is as it is. And finally, our sympathies are with those who have been affected by the flooding. We hope that the Christmas brings better weather and a more productive year ahead. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Sarah MacArthur.